the project clean sweep, actually, if you go back here to tab 4, is the current status of work orders. Again, this listing is by location, street, and address.
Hold on one second. This is previous topic?
Yes.
Let me interrupt you, sir.
Sure. John, is there a potential for...
Yes.
If I understood you right, Dave, once we get environmental approval for the street and drainage project, what I'm personally most concerned about.
Yes.
I'm at the lift station, not the... anyway, we're talking about 6 months, basically.
Yes.
For that to be completed. Is there any way, in the meantime, we can get some potholes filled on some of those streets? In particular, that North Country Club, Center Street intersection?
I'll take a look at that. You know, it just... Yes. The answer is yes, but it's tempered against, you know, how much we expend, knowing that we're right at the precipice of something happening. But it needs to be passable.
It doesn't have to be huge areas, but if you look around there, you see some spots that are a lot worse than
that. We've done that one before, several times, I think. I think it was a matter of just weighing the cost, doing it, knowing that we were going to end up flipping it up again. So, we can talk about it. Okay, sorry, I interrupted you.
All right, so there are the work orders. We've issued 180 work orders as of today. I know that we will have another dozen or so tomorrow. We are down into the final 3 weeks of the Project Clean Sweep under the grant. We have a full complement of 6 full-time employees in the field on that, and I think everyone has seen tremendous progress across the city with that. HGAC inquired, as I previously reported, about our interest in having an extension of that program, which we agreed. They then took that to the Texas Workforce Commission. The Texas Workforce Commission agreed with an extension, and they've applied to the Department of Labor for an extension, because that's where the funding comes from. Our hope was that by the 25th of last month we would know, and that didn't happen. And now we're on a timeline that the Department of Labor is going to let the Texas Workforce Commission know this week. My expectation is on Wednesday we will hear if an extension is granted or not. Not knowing if it is, we're now working the crews 6 days a week. We have more money than we have time left in the project of the grant funds, and so we're working a 6-day week so we can maximize the stuff that gets done, because on June 30th it ends regardless of how much money's left in the bucket or what's undone. If on Wednesday of this week, however, we hear it's going to be extended, then we will immediately stop the weekends for our original 3 employees, and we work half, one crew instead of 2 on Saturdays, so that we can pick those employees up in the second grant, and not, I'd rather have them longer than to burn it up now, because we also have a cap if we can't pay any employee more than $12,000. So when they hit the $12,000, they're gone. And I'd like to keep our veteran experienced people, particularly our team leader, longer as opposed to working on weekends and using his time. So,
is there any possibility that they would grant waivers since we were unable to get the maximum number of employees
allowed? No. The concession I got there is the authority to hire beyond the authorized number, as long as they stay within the dollars. But the problem is with the hoops that there are to jump through for those, we've not been able to hire more than 6. Right now, I could have 14. So I could have a lot more people, but I'm just not getting the applicants that are qualified. So my hope is if we get an extension early on, we'll hit it hard with a request for them to relax the requirements for employment. And if we can do that, then we can get the full complement for the full time. But Those are chickens I don't want to count yet. So we're right now in a wrap-up mode of pushing to finish all the projects. So, you know, one of the things we have been doing are cutting stumps. And if we hear negative on Wednesday or this week, it's not going to happen, then we'll start, we'll get another machine and we'll start running two crews on stump cutting so we can knock those out. The biggest project that we have to date started today. Well, actually, it may have started Friday, but today in earnest, and that's the South Brook right-of-way between Shady Lawn and Baywood. The city has a 145-foot right-of-way there, a street right-of-way where there is no pavement, and it has collected a lot of debris, storm debris, and has become a harborage of not only vermin, but also of our local teenage population. And so we're going to clear that out. We're going to do it for the same standards that we did Taylor Biopark when we did that. So we will remove all the dead trees. We will shred all of the brush, and we'll shred all of the trees that are under 4 foot and leave them chipped in place as we did Taylor Bio. All the trash will be removed. We will not be taking out any live trees, whether they're trash trees or otherwise, if they're over 4 foot. So we'll leave as much vegetation as possible, but we will clear that out. And it is drainage, and it does drain back to a boggy biome, and we want to improve that drainage. On the water main replacement project, which tab 5, on Friday of last week at 10 in the morning was the bid opening for our three water lines, water mains that we're replacing. And engineer Jerry Crouch was here at 10 o'clock to open bids, and we received one qualified bid. It was from an unmotivated bidder. We got a high bid by the engineering estimate. It was about $90,000 on that single bid. On the engineer's recommendation and mine, is that we do not accept the bid and that we put it back out and re-advertise. My understanding is that the bidder, we hit at a time where the bidder was flush with work, and so he bid accordingly. We need to expand our circle and get more qualified bidders. It doesn't make sense, the size of the project, for us to overspend on it. It is a pressing project. It is not an emergency. Tomorrow, the city engineer will give us the dates on the advertising and opening. On that page that you're looking at are the dates that I believe it's going to end up being, which is a July 8th bidding and advertising on June 23rd and June 30th, which meets all of the procurement regulations. So we're just going to recycle on that. That's why it's not on the agenda tonight. I look for it to be on our July agenda so that we can move on with those projects. The Baywood storm drainage project is complete. Yes, sir?
Where will you advertise
that? Well, okay, well, first, you can go right to our website. It's right on the home page. It says notice to bidders and water lines. And that would be the easiest way to get the material. But we advertise it in the Houston Chronicle, and we also advertise it with two Public Works bid services. They're not just limited to Public Works, but they're construction bid services. The contractors subscribe to it. It's kind of like an employment service of sorts. It's online. They say what kind of projects they're interested in, and then they get notices of who's going out for bids. The Baywood Storm Drainage Project, which was cutting the ditches, that work is complete. The rehabilitation of the Public Works Building. I've had two meetings with the architect that we've been working with, which is the same architect that's doing the police station. It has the contract with our engineering firm to do the architectural work on the police station. I also had a meeting with a windstorm engineer to look at the existing structure and the proposed modifications. Anything that's existing is already grandfathered in, but anytime we make any changes, exterior structural, we'll have to get the Windstorm Engineering sign-off. And so before we put out a bid package for something that was going to adversely impact our ability to get our Windstorm certification, we got ahead of that by having a Windstorm Engineer come out and look at it and, in essence, bless in advance the construction technique. I was particularly pleased because the architect didn't believe that what I wanted to do was going to fly, and the Windstorm Engineer endorsed it as the preferred way to do it, so it's a win-win. We are planning to replace the exterior of the building on the east side and the north side only, so that's where the bay doors are at and the side that faces this building, and it will look like conventional construction and not a metal building anymore. That said, that's progressing nicely. We have completed the demolition of the inside of the building. I think I may have sent you some photographs. It's nice and clean in there and ready to proceed. So none of that demolition work will come out of our $80,000 that we budgeted for the renovation, which is a good savings of that. It did all come out of the Project Clean Sweep crews. The Gateway project out there at the entrance, I talked with Knutson, the engineers that are doing the design and the construction drawings and specifications. Last week, they're at 70% engineering. They have taken the video elements out using the spec sheets that I had provided and to locate interested bidders and to get some feedback before they put it out for bid. They talked with one of the large national sign companies that has offices here in Houston about that. They were unfamiliar with the specifications and the products that that I was looking at on the video. I had mentioned to council there are only four in all of the greater Houston area. Obviously, they weren't theirs. So they looked at that. Our engineer firm, Knutson, was very pleased that the sign company not only located the specific type of video elements that I was looking for, but that the sign company was unfamiliar with it, and when they got the information, they were excited about it. They contacted the manufacturer. They have arranged to bring out a full-size demonstration sign and set it in the median for us so that we can see exactly what it's going to look like before it even goes out for bid. They're interested in the product to sell it to other people, but they were unaware of it. So it's a win-win for everybody. Of course, there's no obligation to us, and there's no obligation that they would get the bid, but for us it's a great win because we can now see what it would look like in situ. Of course, it wouldn't include the limestone elements. It would just be the sign portion itself, but I think that's a really good thing for us so that if we change our mind too, we have that opportunity. So I'm looking forward to that happening in about the next 3 weeks. That company is bringing a truck, trucking it down here to Houston to do that for us. The enforcement activities. And somehow, what is it, tab 9 perhaps? If you go to tab 9, this is the list of addresses that have been on the website since May 26th at least. There's been one that's been pulled off that was in error, and it has been updated again today. You'll see that there are basically two sets of issues. There's really three, but substantial damage and dangerous building being the largest, and there's one non-conforming use on Miramar that's on here as well. Friday, I outlined and wrote the next document that follows thereafter, the dangerous building enforcement, five-page document that provides a blueprint for the process and ties it back to our city code. And while it's not reflected here, I then tied back in my own documentation from the city code back to state statute. To make sure there weren't any changes in state statute or conflict, and there are none. So everything that in here is current, and it is streamlined in this document as well from the large volume that you would find in Chapter 10. One of the areas of streamline that will help the most is the definition of dangerous building. I pulled from the code five that we will use to address virtually all of them that are on this list, which avoids the ones that would require us to hire an engineer at the very beginning. For some of the determinations, you have to calculate the center of gravity of the structure, and it just is financially onerous for us to do that. I think that the structures we're talking about, these five elements, will hit them all, and we won't need to do that. That's really designed for other kinds of structures and things where you have the Leaning Tower of Pisa instead of a storm-damaged building. So there is an outline that you can have. Then at the end of that is a flow chart. The flow chart shows the process in kind of a thumbnail sketch there from the reports, inspection, and determinations. And you can see now there are some little detours along the way, and there are some other issues that get addressed that aren't reflected here, but this is the flow chart of the process. Yes, that's correct.
I don't have extra copies of this, but if you wanted to see what we're talking about, you can just pass it around. And
Before I move to the next page with the timing, let me just talk about the flowchart for a second. Today, with this information, I met with Latney about the nuts and bolts process and how we proceed. And the way that we're going to start this off is the trigger of the report will come from me to Latney as the building official for him to do the inspections to make the initial determination of dangerous building under the code. I want to be the gatekeeper on that for a couple reasons. One is to make sure that our highest problem structures are done first. We need to take a measured approach here, and that we can create something we can't keep up with if we start the process on all of them simultaneously. So out of today's meeting, on Tuesday of next week, Latney and I will do the first six inspections and determinations. I don't think any of them are going to be questionable. I think they're all going to be pretty slam dunks, but we will do that and make the determination. We are going to create a form for the process so that we can have consistency in all the inspections and all the determinations and make it as clean as possible and as defendable as possible when ultimately the challenge comes. The address list that she just handed out is on our website. If you just go to code enforcement activity, you'll see that and see the state of where we are on all of this. If you look at the next page, it has a typical action timeline. And that starts with the inspection and determination. And with each of those blocks of the activities, are a range of dates, and those are quote-unquote typicals. So inspection and determination, to give you an example, it probably will only take less than an hour to do the actual inspection. But incumbent with the inspection is documenting that and then preparing the notice to correct, which is shown in the box beneath it. So what you see in the activity is the inspection and determination, which then results in a notice to correct. But that all has to be done with all the full documentation and citing what the violations are and what the corrections required are. And so while that may take only 1 or 2 days, my target is for it to take 3 days. If that happens, if the inspection is on a Friday, it might be Monday of the week following before that actually gets wrapped up. The next block is the notice to correct. That is in that process, providing a notice to the owner, and if that's not corrected, then it moves to a notice of hearing, which comes to City Council, and then we have a City Council hearing. The Council will do an order. You may see it's 1 to 21 days. You might say it wouldn't take any time at all because the night of the hearing you could do the order, but there's actually paperwork that has to be done too, much like you know, any action or ordinance we pass here. We have to get signatures and do all the blessings. So that would take at least one day. My goal is for it not to take more than 2 days. And then that orders the owner to take action. They have to be given reasonable time. For most things, council can't give them more than 30 days. There are other things, then you can have exceptions that go out to 90 days. And then there's even some exceptions that could push it beyond that. But I think we can stay within the 90 days on everything. If the owner fails to take action, then we're required to notice any lien holder, if there are is any, and give them an opportunity to cure because they have an interest in the property. And if they fail to act, then we're at the point where we come back here with a decision whether we want to expend money and do something. And so the process is laid out. The next step is between now and next Tuesday to prepare the forms for documenting it so that we can do 6 inspections on Tuesday and send out the notice to correct. And then we will be off to the races. Right now, our going in position is that every 2 weeks, we will do 6 more, plus the number that have dropped out. So to explain that, 2 weeks from next Tuesday, we would do 6 more inspections, and if the original 6, if let's say 3 of them were to have torn the house down, instead of 6, we would do 9. And so we will do 6 plus any that have dropped off the list so that we just keep adding to our numbers so we continue to ratchet up by 6 that we're carrying on the books each 2 weeks. That also spreads the timing out for the hearings. We also don't want to have hearings every week. So we'd like to have those in bundles of 6 or so as well for council so that when we come to you. My recommendation is that we do all of those hearings on Mondays that are alternate to a council meeting so that they come in between, so it's still on a Monday. My recommendation is we don't do any of the hearings on a council meeting night, that we were able to do all of that separate and apart. I think it's inevitable we're going to have hearings and we're going to have to order action. In some cases, that doesn't mean we will have to do anything. It will mean there's some dragging, or we're going to push that to a mortgagee to have that happen. One of the things that, you know, as you work through the process, you're gonna hear complaints in all directions, so be forewarned. But Latney and I have really been looking at all of the nuts and bolts of how it goes. And so, for example, someone gets a notice to correct. Our going in position is that it won't be more than 21 days, so we'll give 21 days. If someone wants to make a repair, they would have to complete the repair within 21 days. Now, it's not likely with these structures that they can be repaired within 21 days, but our intent is to hold that line, and on the 22nd day, we would move it to a hearing, bring it to council, because we don't want the clock to stop at any point. They would then have another week to 2 weeks before it gets on the agenda. You know, it has to be posted and all the notices done to the mortgage holders and all the interested parties. And then when we bring it to council, they will have had that extra run of time, and maybe they can have got it to completion or not. We don't want to take away anybody's opportunity to make repairs, but we also don't want it to drag out. That means that we potentially will have structures that we give a notice to repair, who then come up here and ask for a building permit to make those repairs. A building permit for something that we all know they can't complete within 21 days. And so our discussion today is that there is no reason for us not to give them the building permit. We will give them a building permit, and to that we will attach a notice that the issuance of the building permit does not waive the deadlines, does not waive the city's or the ability to enforce it or to get an order to enforce the corrective action. But we don't surrender any of our rights that way, and they move forward. But I'm sure those that come here who intend to elevate the building will have a good story, and it will drag out for years. So on our side, on the staff side, we're not going to slow the process down anywhere that we can help, but keep it moving forward. You know, there are a lot of addresses on that list. The other thing that came out, was very productive out of our meetings today, is the dangerous building is all done by the building official. That's the enforcement person there. Once it goes to a council order, then it comes over to my realm and administrative of coordinating that with council, with helping you with the order, and then doing all the notices to the mortgagee holders and everything all the way through to maybe ultimately we take action. But I have another role here, and that's as floodplain administrator. And so what we discovered is it is much easier to deal with the houses that are on this list that are substantially damaged, because we have another whole body of law that says that you can't repair them, which eliminates that whole getting a building permit to string things out. And so since you can't repair a substantially damaged building, you can only elevate it, then the only permit that would be eligible for that is one to elevate, which requires an engineer letter that says, here's the plan to elevate, so you have a legitimate plan before you can get the permit, which will solve a lot of our problems. After having that discussion, the obvious thing came, now we have homes on this list that were not substantially damaged in October when I did those inspections in 2008. If they've been sitting there in that condition since then, I'm going to go back and do another substantial damage estimate. It may be that some of those that have been, in essence, abandoned in place since 2008 are now substantially damaged, have hit the 50% threshold, and I can make that determination in advance of handing it over to Latney for the dangerous building, which makes it substantially different. The other thing it does is would then require those to be elevated as well, where they previously would not have been. A real complicating factor for all of this, for anybody who wants to elevate now, is that when you get the 50% under dangerous building, you no longer have anything grandfathered. Everything's got to be brought up to current code. Plumbing, electrical, you've lost all of that in this process, which really makes it unlikely that anyone is going to do any repairs to these particular buildings. So they're all candidates for demolition, which I think will make it a lot easier when they come to council for your hearing here. To know what the limitations are, because it's not really realistic that someone for $25,000 is going to rehabilitate one of these structures. It's just not feasible. So you asked for it, here it is, and so where the process begins. And I know Mr. Jovino has a property across the street from him that he likes it just the way it is, but I'm sorry, Phil, we're going to have to get rid of it.
And that, yeah, go ahead.
No, I'm excited what you're just doing with you. I think 3 years is sufficient for anybody.
Yeah.
You know, I think we've been plenty lenient. My question is, does the city have any plans, incentives, or anything for these vacant lots, open properties that we have now, that you fill these lots somehow? I mean, with the owners or whoever, is there anything on the table, any thoughts or any about maybe finding several builders that would be interested in just supporting a plan or a model that we might just show to these owners and say, look, this many dollars, you can have a new home here. Or some kind of an incentive to make these people improve their situation.
Just to encourage new construction?
Yeah.
Okay. It's ever so slightly off topic, but I will tell you that, and I've visited with the mayor about this and some others already, this time next year, I'm making preparations to do what's called a FAM tour, familiarization tour, for realtors and some others, for that very purpose. A year from now, we will have a brand new police station, we'll have a couple of miles of new street, we'll have many miles of new drainage, we'll have new water and wastewater facilities, and we'll have brought we'll have the new entrance signage, we'll have a lot of projects completed, and we'll have a lot to show off. And what I want to do is reintroduce Shore Acres to the real estate community as a place to build. And not only, you know, we can take what's a negative turn to a positive. And that, yes, somebody could say we were the most devastated community from Hurricane Ike. However, we can also show you that every home that was built here after 1985 survived Ike just fine. And that, you know, and so any new construction that we have is going to withstand the likes of Ike. I think it's a real opportunity for us to do a complete renewal of the city and really generate interest and raise property values and redevelopment.
And the new booth mower and everything else.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that should
kind of
improve.
A new water.
Since city like fresh. I think we've done, the city has done all this job of what we have to do, going through all of the obstacles. And I understand some of the things, why you have to take so long on telling people that they have to tear their house down or whatever, and I know there's a lot of implications going in there, but I think 3 years, I think your timing is good.
Yeah, well, we started, I mean, this list admittedly has, I think, 28 houses on it. We've added some others from other things like the non-conforming use, but we started with 180 that required enforcement action. What do we got there? 28. So we're down to 28 out of 180. And you know, 3 years is a long time. We also had extraordinary circumstances, and there are some people who just finished in the last 6 months. They're really grateful that they had the breathing room to get that done. Now we're down to the ones who aren't making any effort. So,
for council's benefit, I just marked the ones on here that are on the Harris County Recovery Program, and then give them to David, and just ask David what he wants to do about.
My understanding, if there's a Harris County Recovery, sort of the bottom of the list is give them a Harris County Recovery.
Yeah, I know.
The extra.
But what about the Harris County Recovery? Are they going to help them elevate
this? Well, I kind of have a split on what we had talked about previously. And those that are on the substantial damage list isn't going to make any difference if the Harris County recovers.
Yeah.
Because ultimately it has to be demolished anyway. Right, and you may recall that case where push came to shove, and I put them on the spot, and they reversed their position and said it could be demolished.
Yeah.
And we're just going to have to do that, I think, on those. The
but
ones so that are doing
the insurance money has to be used for the house before Harris County recovers kicks in anyway, so might as well be used to demolish
them. Okay.
Yeah. And I guess you don't really
see. Well, that's helpful information. I will say there are two other really big issues in the process that there really wasn't any reason to document it in the flow here, but I'll make you aware of, and that is occupied houses are a real problem, and I don't believe we have any on this list that are occupied. The ones that don't have, when you go to the website, the ones that say vacant, we've either made an inspection to know it's vacant, or they have no utilities, so we know it's a vacant. By this time next week, this will be updated to include all the vacant properties, and I don't believe any of these are occupied, so that's very helpful. The other issue that we will need to clarify when we get down to the order portion, if we're ever going to take action ourselves, is there are limitations if they have homesteaded, and in some cases we will not be able to do a lien. We might be able to do the demolition, but we won't be able to do a lien on the homesteaded properties. So there are some legal issues and hurdles. It's way premature to get into that. So I'm just making you aware that you know, we previously had talked about if they're in the rear taxes, we looked at that, and none of them are sufficiently in arrears that it's going to cause us a problem. But the next thing on terms of forcible demolition by the city would be if it's homesteaded. And you don't have to live in it for it to be a homesteaded property. You can homestead. You homestead a vacant lot.
That raises a whole new series of issues.
Yes, but you know, those issues come down that timeline a pretty good ways, and hopefully we'll have things addressed before then. And that's all I have to report this evening.
No, you haven't done much. Howard.
Question, David. Concerning your new video display sign.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm.
Being involved as a tourist, I guess, at several different trade shows, you can go up to a manufacturer afterward and say, you know,
kind of like that piece of equipment there. Give me a discount because it's demo. It's not new. We're going to have to show it.
Or you don't have to truck it home.
Or you don't have to pay your transport for it. Now, once the factory brings it down and sets it up for us, could we get a break and go to demos? And it's here at their expense. Just something in the back of your mind to see if we can't...
We have to... It's not available to us because we're government. We have to follow state procurement. However, that would be something that the sign company that's having it brought down to demonstrate would be eligible to do, and they could then make their bid based on that to get a winning bid by having the lower cost. And then ultimately we would get the savings. I mean, they're still going to make a profit on it, but you know, we get a pass-through savings. So they have the potential to be more competitive.
Congratulations on getting some new technology for the local industry.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. Our engineer was pretty pleased with that.
How big is that going to be? I didn't see any
five by eight.
Yeah, that's about right.
We had it here, yeah.
5 by 8.
It's big.
Yeah, but you know, that around it is like stone, you know, pretty even. Yeah, I mean, we didn't want it to look like you're running a private theater, but at the same time, you know, the idea was that one, you could put, since there's a city council meeting, so more people coming into Shore Acres would see it as opposed to the sign right here at City Hall, and if there's an emergency order, then Dave could put up those kind of safety messages or...
Just put in anything you want. Pictures.
Welcome, you know, the Yacht Regatta, you know, what have you, welcome real estate agents.
Birthdays, anniversaries.
Well, actually, the plan is for it to be a static photograph and not any wording at all the majority of the time.
What we need to know.
Other cities that are doing these gateway projects are having a mural painted on stainless steel and put into the sign. And it's very expensive, and you have to maintain it because, you know, a mural's not going to last forever. My thought here was to be able to provide the mural in a video format so that the mural is there, but then when you have an emergency or you have something you want to replace it with, you can do that remotely and manage your badge.
Do we have the gateway sign specifications on the website?
No, we don't. Because they've not...
I wanted to tell you the sign itself isn't huge, but the whole bottom, and they require the star, and
that's right.
It's massive.
Well, this is going to be at the entrance.
Yeah. Okay. 146 coming in.
And we're going to relocate the pretty wooden one that's there now.
Right, to this part of the city.
It's
very, very pretty.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. You're doing that. I'm
gonna.
Oh, okay. Then if you're through, next item on the agenda is 5.3 monthly police activity report, which is in here.
Tab 10.
I know you want some comments on that.
I like to look at the statistics and compare them to the past few months. Alarm/hang-ups? What is hang-ups? Is that someone hanging up the phone?
911.
Oh,
crap. I missed all information.
Okay. Well, that one went up from 7 to 12, so who knows if that's hang-ups or alarms. Oh, yeah. The arrest went up from 7 in January to 24, with 7, 11, 14, 19, 24, so quite a few arrests.
I'm not sure.
And then EMS/fire calls, 13, which is the most since January. At 4 January, 4 February, 6 March, 5 April, and 13 in May. So that's either fire or ambulance. Those are the three that really stood out I wanted to share with everybody.
Okay. Any questions on the report? Okay. New business, item 6.1, consideration and approval of invoices.
Make motion to pay bills.
Second. That was Connie. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Item 6.2, consideration and approval of resolution number 2011-60, authorizing the city attorney to prepare an agreement and other legal documents as may be required for consideration and action by the city council to assume sole ownership of real property, Shore Acres, Lot 27, Lot 8, in which the city of Shore Acres has a joint ownership interest with other taxing entities. David.
Finally, I get to talk. You turn to tab 11, the last page, there is a drawing that looks like this. This is the 1927 flat of the city of Shore Acres. And you will see a tributary to Taylor Bayou that runs across those lots. And there is a line across the tributary about middle of the page that has the number 8 on it. That is lot number 8. That is in the next block north of us, the third lot in. Lot number 10 has a house on it. Lot number 9 is undeveloped. Lot number 8 is undeveloped. Lot number 7 has a house on it. You can see that the natural drainage, and that is not just a line on paper, it's really active drainage, runs diagonally across that residential lot. That's a 60 by 130 foot lot. And it is rendered virtually unusable by that tributary across there. And as a result, the previous owner stopped paying the taxes on it for a very long time. And in February, there was a tax foreclosure sale. Our tax collection is done, the contract with the City of La Porte. The City of La Porte works with the La Porte Independent School District on tax foreclosures. And so without any action required on our part, they did a tax foreclosure sale, of which the school district is always in the driver's seat because they have the largest share. Second to them was the city of Shore Acres, and everybody else fell out. There was no money left over in terms of money value. So in February, we became the proud owners of that lot together with the school district. So today we have an undivided interest in that property. That property is one that stopped us from getting the drainage grant to go up to Seagrove, where we wanted to make the improvements, because we don't have a drainage easement. So the only thing better than a drainage easement is owning property fee simple. So we have an ownership position now, long after that grant is no longer available to us. And I have contacted the school district's legal counsel, the person that handles their properties, and they have agreed that if we pay all of the transfer expenses, which is preparing all the documents for signature and all the filing fees, that's the only compensation the school district would require for us to take sole ownership of the property. My recommendation is that we do that, that we take possession of the property, then we also file a permanent drainage easement document and grant ourselves a permanent drainage easement. And then at that point in the future, if we ever want to liquidate the property, we can. We would retain the easement, so we'd have the drainage rights. There's really not any tremendous advantage to us to own the property. There would be an advantage to us someday to sell it to the owners of lot 7 or 9, who could use it for green space and yard or for some other purpose, and pay taxes on it, as opposed to us having it with no taxes. So that's my grand plan. That drainage is one of the things that I want to apply for in round 2, cycle 2, and this would put us in 50% of the way there. Still looking to negotiate drainage easements for lots 14 and 15 in that block as well, but that's in the future, and this would move us along that path. So with